So we're looking on Daf Tesamid Beis. And in this sugya, we're really going to need a blackboard and a chart. We'll try to do the best we can. But the Mishnah starts Lehechon Golim, which is the second Mishnah on Tesamid Beis. And we're up to Umosrim Lahem Shnei Talmidei Chachamim. Last time we covered the first half of the Mishnah, and now we start a new topic. And that is, how does the Rotzeach B'Shogeg get himself over to the Ir Miklat? Obviously, he could take a bus or a train, but we realize, of course, that he's exposing himself to a great danger, because who's after him? The Gol Adam. So he's in a very vulnerable situation. So the Mishnah advocates that he be escorted to the Ir Miklat by two Talmidei Chachamim. You know, I would have thought, let's get out, the Shin Bet or something, some burly, strong guys, you know. And here you have these two Talmidei Chachamim, like these little scrawny guys, you know. But what's the purpose, and how do we derive this halacha of Shnei Talmidei Chachamim? So the Mishnah goes on to explain, Shema Yahargenu Badorech, that we really have a fear that the Gol Adam will take revenge. So what good is it by accompanying him with two Talmidei Chachamim? The Yedabru Elof. These two Talmidei Chachamim are meant to convince, to somehow persuade and calm down the Gol Adam. The Gol Adam is in absolute anger. And they have to convince him not to kill the Rotzeach. They have to say some words to him that, look, true, I mean, we're not denying that he killed your relative, but he did it inadvertently. He had no intention whatsoever in killing your relative. The Meiri adds another word over here. He says, "Ein af omrim la noshim hadorim de'ir miklat shol yin hadugov midik shofkei dom." He says that there may be people in the city itself, the refuge, city of refuge, that will mistreat him because they see him as a rotzeach, and therefore we have to make sure that he's treated properly. Rabbi Meir Omer. Now here there's a Girsa question, and that's going to be a major issue here, and how to interpret Rabbi Meir. I'm going to read it without the word af. Hu medaber al yedei atzma. If you take out the word af, then Rabbi Meir has a major argument against the Chachamim, whereas the Chachamim see that the one who's calming down the Gol Adam are these two Talmidei Chachamim that escort him. Rabbi Meir sees it as who the Rotzeach himself should be doing his best, and that's what's going to achieve this goal. How does Rabbi Meir know this, and how do the Chachamim know otherwise? Shenemar, v'zeh dvar harotzeach. The pasuk indicates that there's some sort of dvar harotzeach. Dvar harotzeach is an extra phrase. The pasuk didn't have to mention that at all. And let's read the pasuk. It says, "V'zeh dvar harotzeach asher yonus shama v'chai asher yakes re'eu bivlidas." So this pasuk clearly is addressing the Yonus Shama, the situation of the Rotzeach right after the Ritzich, in which he has to run in order to protect himself into the Ir Miklat. But the pasuk opens up with the word Zedvar HaRotzeach. So according to Chachamim, there's a Dvar, but the most effective Dvar is going to be the Dvar of these Talmidei Chachamim. I'll give you an example. We find with regard to Boaz and Rus. You remember that Boaz, when he wanted to marry Ruth, he had a real challenge. Not everyone was so excited, you know, and said yay to that marriage. It was a legal issue about whether he was allowed to marry her or not. And if you look in the pasuk, it says, "Vayikach Boaz asora anoshim mizikne ha'ir." So on the one hand, these individuals, 10 in number, that he gathered together, were called Anoshim. Anoshim sounds like rank and file citizens. The Gemara said he needed a minion in order to recite Sheva Brachos. Interesting. And this is one of the sources for a minion for Sheva Brachos. And the Gemara even goes a step further. Why did he have to gather 10 people together? He could have gathered 9 because he would have been the 10th. And this leads the Gemara to the conclusion, which by the way we don't pass in this way, that Chosan Eino Min HaMinyan. that you've got to publicize this marriage in front of 10 other people besides yourself. But then it says Zakenim. And the idea of Zakenim is when we're going beyond just describing the reality, we're already giving a commentary. A Zaken can give the commentary. The commentary here is a horah that when the Pasuk says Lo Yavo Amoni Moavi, it refers to the males and not to the females. Right? Moavi Velo Movia. For that he needed Zakenim. Or for example, you'll find that the Gemara says in Brachos that with regard to Birchas Hodoya, right? Our Bo'at Tzrichim LaHodos, which we call in our language Birchas HaGomel. So you need Zakenim. That's the Gemara postulate. There also, we're looking at the events that took place and we're defining them as miraculous. There was an intervention here of Almighty God. This was a mice of Hashgacha Pratis. So we need Zakenim to be part of that public declaration that this was Lamaila min Ateva. And here too, when you look at the event that took place in which Reuven was responsible for the death of Shimon, so Shimon's brother, the Gol Adam, is going to think, wow, Reuven killed my brother, I got to take revenge. The Talmidei Chachamim, the Zakenim, are here to calm him down, to explain to him that this is not the Torah response. The Torah is not asking you to kill him. Don't take the law into your hands. You know, we have a whole sugya in Bava Kama called Ovid Inish Dina L'Nafshe. But Ovid Inish Dina L'Nafshe, if we accept it, Lahalach, which is itself is an issue in the poskim, only applies in Dini Mominos. So for example, it could be that if you damage me, I'm allowed to grab on to those very kalim that you abandoned in order to make sure that you'll pay me back. So I take the law into my own hands. But as far as killing someone because of Ovid Inish Dina L'Nafshe, that we're not going to accept. And therefore the Talmidei Chacham have to point this out to him, calm down. And according to the Chachamim, the premise here, or the hope is, that they'll succeed.
Could he defend himself?
Oh, could he defend himself? Under the law of Kolabola Hargacha, Hashkim Hargo? And the answer is absolutely yes. And it's fascinating, the Klei Chemda, which is one of the most lumdish commentaries on the Torah, in Parshas Pinchas, which is not far around the bend, says that Pinchas was running after Zimri, that Al-Pidin Zimri could turn around and kill Pinchas. Isn't that fascinating? Under the halach of Rodev, even though, again, Zimri was taken, put to death by Pinchas under the law of Kanoim Pogimbo, but nevertheless, he could defend himself. And I would make it into a Kal Vachomer in the case of a Rotzeach who's defending himself against the Gol Adam. But Rabbi Meir comes along and he says, no. According to Rabbi Meir, he himself is going to talk to the Gol Adam. So the Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayos here on our Mishnah that the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim revolves around this question as we presented it. Is it necessary for the Talmidei Chachamim to speak on behalf of the Rotzeach? The Chachamim say yes. Whereas Rabbi Meir says no. There's no obligation according to Talmidei Chachamim. He will speak on his own behalf. But both the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, even Rabbi Meir, agree that the Talmidei Chachamim will escort the Rotzeach. And the question is, if according to the Rambam's interpretation of Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim are not speaking to the Gol Adam, one would wonder, why Bichlal are the Talmidei Chachamim there? What role are they playing? Meaning, Bishleim, according to Chachamim Nicha, I understand that the Rotzeach is being accompanied for his protection because the Gol Adam, when he meets face to face these Talmidei Chachamim, it'll be very difficult for him in front of these Talmidei Chachamim to throw them off. But according to Rabbi Meir, who says that it's he himself who's defending himself, and when the Torah says Zedvar Rotzeach, it's referring to the Rotzeach, because Rabbi Meir is taking this pasuk literally, Dvar HaRotzeach, I'm not sure why, according to Rabbi Meir, these two Talmidei Chachamim should be there at all.
Just their presence, even if they don't speak.
Obviously, it's just their presence. Somehow, their presence, and the fact that the Talmidei Chachamim are hearing the words of of the Rotzeach, and in a sense that gives it a certain geshpanka, you know, it gives it a certain, how shall I say, certification or authorization. But nevertheless, the Mefarshim on the Mishnah, like the Tiferes Yisrael and Tosfos Yonta, they all say that even Reb Meir agrees that Sholchim Imo Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, even though it's not their responsibility to be Mefayes the Gol Adam. The Rotzeach himself has to do that. But nevertheless, these Talmidei Chachamim, even according to Reb Meir, will accompany the Rotzeach.
Is that a legal requirement?
Yes. It's a legal requirement, but as a moral requirement. Meaning, none of the halachas will change as far as the power of Klita of the Yermiklot if this halacha wasn't implemented. Mm. For example, it could very well be that the Rotzeach is in such a rush to get himself over to the Yermiklot, he's not going to wait around for the Talmidei Chacham. So Lamaisa befall, it won't be implemented. But nevertheless, if he gets to the Yermiklot on time, he is protected by the Yermiklot. Did somebody else want to ask
any discussion of the purpose of these two
Talmidei? Other than the fact that they're there to appease the Gol Adam.
Yeah, if the Gol Adam comes and sees that there is a skirt by two Talmidei Chachamim, he may take a step back and say...
Correct. He'll be inhibited. You know, if the Talmidei Chachamim are discouraging him...
So according to what measure...
According to Reb Meir, as we said before, I guess the Talmidei Chacham are only there to give a certain support to the Rotzeach.
Can I get this straight? Yes. He actually killed somebody, and he runs to the Yer Mikvah. Then there's a trial. He has to leave the Yer Mikvah.
Yeah, that we're going to get to a little bit later.
Isn't it what's going on here? I'm asking, why doesn't the Beis Din go to him in the Yer Mikvah? There's a lot of other people that have to go to the Yer Mikvah with him.
Why don't these Talmidei Chacham enter into the Yermiklot with him, you say?
No, not the Talmidei Chacham. There's no Beis Din. Why is there no Beis Din in the Yermiklot? Why does he have to leave to go to the Beis Din?
Why don't we establish a Beis Din in the Yermiklot? All right. Okay, I'm not up to that yet. I'm just trying to find out who's talking.
Why is he even leaving? Isn't he going?
He killed someone, and now he's got to get himself over to the Yermiklot.
The English is saying...
Oh, I didn't see the English, sorry.
Well, maybe someone else says it here, because this is translated to
Okay. No, I'm just saying, you're hitting me with new information.
No, okay, so what's going on here? Why are these guys escorting to where? To trial, right?
To the Yer Miklat.
From the trial?
No, after the Ritzicha. That's how I understood it. Again, I don't know what it says there, but...
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I don't know. What does he say there? I mean, again, I have to...
The Rambam, Hilchos Ritzeach, and the Tosfos Yontif, they're saying that this is after the trial on the way to the Yer Miklot.
Oh, it's to the Yer Miklot.
But it's after the trial.
Ah, so you're asking if it's... I didn't even enter into that question, whether it's before the trial or after the trial.
I'm assuming he ran first to the Yer Miklot, then he had to go to the trial. So he left the Yer Miklot, went to the trial, and now they're taking him because he was deemed Chayav
Gols,
as opposed to...
And therefore, what's your question now? Why don't we establish a Beis Din in the Yer Miklot itself?
It's easier for everybody, though. I mean,
we have to learn the laws of Beis Din. I don't know exactly what kind of Beis Din you need here. I think you need a Beis Din of Chav Gimel. I don't know if you can take that out of its place.
Three? I mean, is this a murder trial?
Yeah, I don't think three will do. And if it's Chaf Gimel, you have to have what's called a Bezen Kavua. I don't know if they could... I mean, you could ask the question, why don't they establish a Bezen Kavua in the Yer Miklot? I mean, there are... You know, we'd have to learn the first Perek Masechta Sanhedrin. What are the criterion for where you establish a Bezen?
I mean, if you have 42 plus 6, I mean, those 6 cities were probably big, and the 42 might have been small. Is that
No, but I'm just saying, imagine establishing a Bezen in 48 cities. You know, that's asking a lot. And you're talking about a Bezen of Chav Gimel. They got to be smuchim. I don't know. I guess we'll get to that later. I don't know. I don't know if we'll get to discuss what constitutes a Bezen here for this purpose. Okay, let's move on. And now we study Rabbi Yossi for Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi for Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'tchila. In other words, this is immediately after the Ritzicha. Echad Shogeg v'Echad Mezid, Makdimim li'Arei Miklat. Okay, so whenever he killed, whenever somebody kills someone, we don't know whether he killed them deliberately or not, he runs to the Ir Miklat. And this is based on a pasuk. The pasuk says in Dvarim Yutes, V'chi yeh ish sonei l'reyu v'arev lo v'kamalav v'ko nefesh v'meis v'nasal achas ha'arim ha'el. Okay? That's the pasuk that Rashi quotes over here. So now, let's see what happens. According to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Beis Din now has to summon him to court and decide exactly what his status is. And there are two possibilities. Beis Din Sholchim Umevino So Misham. Beis Din of the city in which he committed the murder will now summon him and bring him from the Ir Miklat to the Beis Din. And they have to decide the following. Mishin is chayev misu beis din if they determine based on Edom and Asra that he killed b'mezid haraguhu, they put him to death. And the pasuk then, in that very same pasuk, says v'sholchu ziknei iro v'lochos o'misham, and then v'nosnu oso biyad gol hadam v'mes. So you take the pasuk literally, the one who's actually going to be putting him to death is the gol hadam. Okay, we'll get back to that in just 1 minute. So again, the first possibility is that they established that he killed, b'mezid. But the second possibility is, shalom ischayv mi, so if he did not kill deliberately. So then, once again, there are two possibilities. He might be deemed, or the verdict might be that he's not chayv golus at all. For example, let's say in the classical case of Karov Laones, he's not chayv golus. Is pitaruhu, as they send him on his way. If he's nischayv golus, misha nischayv golus, meaning they established that he killed bishoge, he wasn't a Karov Laones, machzirin oso limakomo, they bring him back to the Ir Miklat. Shenemar veishivu oso ha'eda el ir miklato. I don't know. I didn't get that impression. But you say he quoted a Rambam about the Shnei Talmidei Chachamim.
It says in the words, the court would provide for them an escort of two Torah scholars to return them to the city of refuge after the trial. 21, and it says, he's quoting the Rambam, it was for 8.
I didn't see the Rambam. Maybe we could take a look at the Rambam.
Because again, provided for the return to the Ir Miklat, right, of the killer sentenced to exile.
Right. Because the, you know, the impression I got just from the way the Mishnah presents it, and I didn't see the Rambam, is that
the Shnei Talmidei Chachamim should come after decision. Where the Mishnah seems to stand.
You know what? Let me offer the following possibility. Okay, I may be sticking my neck out over here because I'm trying to figure out what led the Rambam to this conclusion. Perhaps what the Rambam understands is that the predicate that these two Talmidei Chachamim are operating with is that he killed Bishoge. How do they know that? They weren't witnesses to the crime. So the Rambam's only answer was that we have to sort of switch the sequence in the Mishnah. And that even though the Mishnah hasn't yet discussed the case of Machzirin also, so first the Mishnah speaks about escort, the two Talmidei Chacham escort. Or maybe the Rambam holds that Beis Din has to appoint them, and yet if he's running on the first round, Beis Din doesn't even know about the Ritzicha.
Then it gives you an answer why you need the Shlichim. Why you need the...
What do you mean?
Their purpose is after the...
The decision, the verdict.
They have to escort him to
Rambam. Right. All right, go ahead. I didn't know this Rambam. But I'm beginning to sense that the Rambam is correct. I didn't get that impression from learning the Mishnah, because the Mishnah
seems a little out of sequence.
Yeah, it's a little bit out of sequence. But what the Rambam is saying is that now that we know Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that we have to try the Rotzeach and then possibly send him back to the Yirmik because we've determined that he was Chayv Golus. Now the Rotzeach B'Shogeg is really exposed to a danger. You could even add the fact that maybe the Bezdin feels morally responsible if the Golodom kills him, because how could they leave him off Hefker if he only killed B'Shogeg? But the bottom line is that the Rambam is saying, not like what I told you before, that we have to get him back to Bezdin, get him back to the Yirmiklot with an escort. Fine. Now, I wanted to point out to you another Me'iri. So the Me'iri says the following. He says that even though the pasuk says "v'nasnu oso biyad gol adam v'mes," which literally means that if the Bezdin determined that he killed the Bezdin, they should hand over the rotzeach to the gol adam, let the gol adam put him down. He says, nevertheless, ein kavonas hakra kipshuto mamish. We should not interpret this pasuk literally. Ela heim yikaimu bo es ritzono shel gol adam. Bezdin is responsible to execute the murderer, which is in a sense fulfilling the will of the Gol Adam. But it's not that they give literally, even though the Torah seems to indicate that, give give the victim, in this case the Rotzeach, over to the Gol Adam for the Gol Adam to kill him. That's the opinion of the Me'iri. However, in the footnote, he says, Yesh Mefarshim HaMikra Kipshuta, that not everyone accepted this Me'iri. And Bezdin nosinu so biyad gol adam shargenu sha'after otzeach hanidon bebezdin yesh mitzvah sheyhoreg biyad gol adam kimo shenemar gol hadam hu yomis eser otzeach. Doesn't mean that the Torah is describing the gol adam killing the otzeach. It's not a description. It's actually an obligation. There's a mitzvah upon the gol adam to put him to death. If the Gol Adam, removes himself, he says, I don't want to fulfill that mitzvah, then Bezdin will put him to death. So I just want to point out to you, because I think this is going to become relevant later on. So we should know that there are two opinions as to who actually puts the Rotzeach.
You're talking about when it's the Mason, right?
Talking about the Mason.
So I thought there was four types of death. And
we're talking about Saif.
If the Gol Adam kills him, he's probably not using
him. Right. Only when Bezdin is mitzvah to put him to death, they have a mitzvah to kill him with Saif. The Gol Adam can put him to death in any way he wants.
So it was Mekaper. So if the Gol Adam kills him.
You're asking if maybe there are different levels. Let's say he kills him in a lighter way than Saif or something like that. Okay. So then how will he get Kapara? That's a good question. I don't know. So we start the sugya. Shalosh Orim Hivdil Moshe Bevra Yardain Ukenegdom. Does Art Scroll have a picture here, by the way, a diagram?
What?
No. Oh, okay.
This page.
All right. No, because this sugya that we're about to learn really, really badly needs a diagram. Okay, anyway. So there are three cities that Moshe establishes on Evra Yardain. Okay, Ukenegdom. Kenegdom means on exactly the same level. Meaning, if you draw a line from east to west, Hivdil Yoshua the Eretz Kenan. Yoshua set up three parallel cities on the same level in Eretz Yisrael proper. Mechuvonos Hayu, the three cities that Yoshua set up in Eretz Yisrael proper were actually parallel. They actually corresponded in their location to those three cities that were established by Moshe Nevra Yarden. Come in, Shtei Shuros Sheba Kerem. You know, often when we want to indicate a line, a straight line, we talk about a Shura Sheba Kerem. If you've ever seen a vineyard, it's a very, very straight line. So now the Mishnah delineates all the cities. Three cities in Nevra Yarden, and they're parallel cities, almost like twin cities in the sense that they're on the same Shura, in Eretz Kenan. So first, we talk about Eretz Yisrael. So you'll have 1-1, 1-1, and 1-1. So Chevron Shebi Yehuda. We're moving now from south to north. So in Yehuda, which is relatively south, the city of refuge was Hebron. That, by the way, is a problem unto itself. The Gemara is going to pick this up later, because Hebron was the private city that was granted to Kalev ben Yefuna. Okay, that's the sugya that we'll hopefully we'll get to.
It's not one of the Eir Miklat.
No, it is an Eir Miklat, but it can't be an Eir Miklat. In other words, we're going to have to somehow reconcile the fact that the Psukim in Tanakh define Hebron as a privately owned city, and yet it's an Eir Miklat. An Eir Miklat cannot be privately owned. So I'm just giving you a heads up that Hebron is a problem. Okay, fine. Kineged, what's on the other side in the Evrat Yarden, is Betzer Bamidbar. There's a city called Betzer, which was established by Moshe Rabbeinu as an Eir Miklat in Eiver HaYarden. Now, if you're interested in a little bit of Hashkafa here, the Ben Yehoyada, who's one of the great commentaries on Agadita, he makes a comment that Betzer was in the Nachla of Reuven, and there's a direct connection here between Yehuda and Reuven. Those two Shvatim are connected to each other. In a very strange way, because it's Reuven who actually calls Yehuda one of the brothers, and he sort of like reinstitutes Yehuda despite Vayered Yehuda v'yeis Echav. But in any event, there's a certain like association here between Yehuda and Reuven. Okay. Oh, by the way, let me just sharpen that a little bit. Actually, there was a mutual. Ben Yehoyada says there was a. You know who the Ben Yehoyada is? It's the Ben Ish Chai. So he says there was actually a reciprocal give and take between Reuven and Yehuda. They both helped each other. He says, "Mi garam le Reuven sheyode Yehuda." Reuven does tshuva for Big Machal Yitzuei Aviv, following the paradigm of Yehuda, who does tshuva for the mice of Tamar. Okay? And he says the other way around, Yehuda, Reuven does something good for Yehuda. I'm sorry. So, mi garam le Reuven sheyode Yehuda. And then he says, Yehuda is garem le Reuven lios nimna v'chlal ha-shvat. The exact opposite of what I said. That Reuven, even though he was Machal Yitzuei Aviv, he was reinstituted into the Shvatim. He didn't lose his status as a Shevet because of Yehuda.
Where's Shevet
Reuven?
Is it in the north?
I don't know. Reuven is in Betzer. Betzer, I think, is in the south. We're moving north now.
This is in the south.
Correct.
But Reuven, that's like Amon and Moab. Reuven was in that area?
I don't know. Let's go through the Mishnah and we'll see. Maybe we'll find an answer to your question. Let's go through the three cities in Eivra Yarden. Shechem, Behar Ephraim, it corresponds to Ramot Shebegilad. Ramot Shebegilad is in the middle of Eivra Yarden. And then Kedesh, Behar Naphtali, is on the same line, Keneged Golan Babashan, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, is up north. Okay. So we have to figure out if part of Reuven settled in the south, part of Reuven settled in the north. I don't know. Where do we know this from, this whole idea that the Ari Miklat should be Mechuvanos? So the Gemara derives it from the Pasuk Vishilashta. And the Pasuk in Dvarim Yutes says, Vishilashta es Gvul Artzecha. And what does that teach us? Shiyahu Mishuloshim. In other words, that the three cities of refuge should be equidistant one from the other. So basically, if I understand the map, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, what we do is if you take the width of Eretz Yisrael, and you can do this at every level going north from the south, what you're doing is you're dividing Eretz Yisrael into four equal parts. Meaning the distance from each one of those four points, the two extremities and the two in the middle, is equidistant. Correct? So by dividing it into four sections, you're gonna have three points which are equidistant one from the other, and those are the three Ari Miklat. Correct? So basically, if you look at the map from, let's say, south to north, what you're going to find are two shuros, correct? And each of those shuros are made of 3 points, right, from south to north, correct? And there, and at each level, you have 2 Arei Miklat that are exactly parallel to each other. So if I were to measure the distance, excuse me, from the southernmost border of Eretz Yisrael to Hebron, that would be equal to the distance between Hebron and Shechem, which would be equal to the distance between Shechem and Kadesh, which would be equal to the distance between Shechem and the northern border of Eretz Yisrael. Does that make sense, what I just said? Well, let's read in the Mishnah and see if the Mishnah bears me out. He says, Shiyehei midorom, that is from the southernmost point of Eretz Yisrael, and up till the Ad Lechevron, because Chevron is the is of the Arei Miklat in Eretz Yisrael proper, is the most southern one. Ki me Chevron to Shechem, because Shechem is north of Chevron. And then me Chevron to Shechem, if you're measuring the distance not from the southernmost border to Chevron, but the distance from Chevron to Shechem, that's equal to Ki Mishchem LeKedesh. And Mishchem LeKedesh is equal to Mikedesh LeTzafon, to the northern border of Eretz Yisrael. So how many different measurements do we have? We have from the southernmost point going up to Chevron, that's 1. From Chevron, we're going up to Shechem, that's 2. From Shechem to Kedesh is 3. And from Kedesh to the northernmost border is 4. We're measuring 4 areas, and they're equidistant. We can do the same thing in Eivra Yarden. But I'm not saying that Eivra Yarden looks exactly the same, but what we have to do is we have to approximate it in such a way that those 3 Arei Miklat and Eretz Yisrael are exactly on the same line from west to east as the 3 cities in Eivra Yarden. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question. The Eivra Yarden plus the Eretz Yisrael Tlas. There are 3 in Eivra Yarden. There are 3 in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it doesn't make any sense. Rashi explains. The population of Eivra Yarden was approximately 1/4 of that of Eretz Yisrael. Because how many Shvatim were in Eivra Yarden? Only 2.5. Okay, you have to calculate that Levi was the smallest of Shvatim at only number 22,000, but just the Gadol, you know, if we round it off, we're talking about a ratio of 1/4. Now, how many Arei Miklat do you have in Eivra Yarden? 3. That, you know, that would make sense if we reflected that 50% of the Jewish population lived in Eivra Yarden. In other words, the population numbers should reflect where the roads are and how many people killed B'shogeg, and you want to afford them with protection.
Population is not a function of the numbers, but
you mean you could have larger Shvatim? That is true. We would have to go through the parshios of, you know, Chumash HaPkudim and see, but whatever it is, it's certainly not 50-50. Oh, that's exactly the Gemara's conclusion. This is a Pella. And if you turn to Daf Yud Omid Aleph, the Gemara says, just 1 second, I'm sorry, we're still on Daf Tes Amid Beis. The Gemara says the name of Abaye, that Begilad, which is one major section in Eivra Yarden, Shchichei Rotzchem. There's a non-proportional abundance of Rotzchem in Eivra Yarden. You know, you conjure up in your mind all sorts of visions and answers of why they should be. Oh, so that's going to be a problem, and I'm sure that you have it there in your footnotes, but I'm going to try to present my own thesis on what's going on here. But before we get to that, I just want to point out that, and I should have photocopied this for you, the Ramban, in his commentary on the Torah at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, asks the following 2 questions. He says, I don't understand. What bothers this Gemara? There were 42 Arei Leviim that also had the status of Ir Miklat, and he says that 36 of them, of the 42, were located in Eretz Yisrael. Only 6 of the 42 were in Eivra Yarden. Therefore, when you calculate, you more or less come to a ratio of 1 to 4. Again, there are a lot of mathematical calculations here. But if you add the 3 Arei Miklot to the 36 Arei Leviim that are koltos in Eretz Yisrael, you come up with the number 42, correct? I'm sorry, what did I just say? 39, I meant to say. And in Avra Yardin, you've got 3 plus 6 is 9, so it's like 39 to 9. I mean, it's beginning to approximate. Then he has another question. He says, the Psukim in Tanakh, and again, his scholarship here all over the place, Sefer Yeshua, Devar Yomim, it becomes quite clear that amongst the 42 Arei Leviim, 36 of which were in Eretz Yisrael, he says, once you add up, he says the following, that you go through the Psukim and you see that the Shetach, the land space of Avra Yarden, was absolutely humongous. He says, "Are you gadol ad mi'od?" The Ramban in his Pirush al Torah. Ulefichach, he says, "Hutzrichu bo shalosh arei miklat." In other words, the number of arei miklat should be a function not of the population, he says, or at least that's not the only variable, but also of this, the land space. I'm thinking of Canada, for example. You know, Canada is one of the largest countries on the globe. You know, I think it's second to what used to be the Soviet Union, right? But 90% of it is uninhabitable. Anyway, so you can imagine if you're stuck in Halifax, you know, in Canada, you know, and there's only one Arei Miklot in the whole state of Canada. How are you going to get yourself over to the Arei Miklot? The Ben Yehoyada adds another question here. If you look carefully, the Gemara quotes a brisa, right? And the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan. I learned in a brisa. And the Gemara now quotes the brisa a second time. And the Gemara has a cash on the brisa. Why is the Gemara raising this question on the brisa? This objection has to be raised on the Torah itself. The Torah itself says that there were 3 cities of refuge in Eretz Yisrael and 3 in Avra Yarden. And his answer is that which I find very dachuk, I don't know, maybe you can get me excited about his answer. He says that if we did not have the brisa, our answer would have been that the 3 cities in Avra Yarden were relatively small cities, whereas the spans of the cities in Eretz Yisrael were absolutely gigantic. And therefore, they had the ability to be collate more rotzke. So the population in Eretz Yisrael, let's say, is 4 times, just for argument's sake, is 4 times greater, but the cities were 4 times larger. That's what we could have said if not for the brisa. That's a brilliant insight, but what's bothering the Gemara? Ah, the brisa is bothering the Gemara. Vashtate in the brisa. The brisa says, "Hayu Arim be'Eretz Yisrael mechuvanos keneged ha'Arim be'Avra Yarden," that they were absolutely on the same line. Mashma sheshavos elu li'elu af begodol, that all the cities were the same size. Okay, I don't know. I don't see it clearly, but that's what he answered. Fine. And then the Gemara answers, Amar Abayi beGilad shchichei rotzchim. So the more rotzchim in Gilad. Okay, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu already knew with his divine omnipotence to anticipate that down the line there would be more rotzchim in that area. Because keep in mind, the mitzvah of 3 Arim was given before the land was even settled, certainly before there were rotzchim, but Hashem anticipated this, and that's what the Ramban says in his Pirush al Torah. But the problem is, and take a look at Tosus Dibra Maschel Begilad, he says, but Pirish Ulahachi Hutzchul Yari Mikol Fisha Hargim Mazid below Edim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mizamnon Lefundok Echad Kiramir Lekamad Afirum in Beis. What happens is, we're talking about a case of Ritzich where there were no witnesses. We don't know whether it was B'shogig or B'mezid. In the case of Gilad, because of the propensity or the inclination to murder, there were many, many rotzchim that killed B'mezid, but just we weren't able to establish that. So what happens if God knows that so-and-so killed someone with reason, but we don't know? So the Gemara is going to say later on that we're going to set up HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Zashkach, and Protus is going to set it up that somebody's going up the ladder and he falls, he's down the ladder. Remember the whole thing, Rashi brings it out of Torah. So basically, we need a Rotzeach B'Shogeh in order to take the Rotzeach B'Shogeh and put him to death. Is Mimela, since there was such a large number of Rotzim in Gilad, we needed, right, and those Rotzim were amazing Rotzim, we needed a disproportional amount of Ari Miklad in Gilad in order to facilitate all the Rotzim Shoking, because to make sure that the law, the divine law, is meted out to those who intentionally murdered, there are going to be a lot of unintentional murders. That's what Tosus says. I mean, I'm not here to argue with Tosus, but I just would like to suggest my own take on this. Just one second. I just want to see if he gives another possibility here before I say what I want to say. Let's see. Fine. He gives his whole presentation of Tosus. And the Ramban says that Rotsu Megillah Rabbayim Hayu Hayu Harugim Amazin Osasa. Okay, fine. That's all included in Tosus. I would like to suggest the following, that a Rotzeach is a Rotzeach, whether he kills B'mezid or kills B'shogeg. We've discussed this on many occasions. For example, we said that in the case of a Ger Toshav, he's Chayav Misa if he kills B'shogeg, if he kills another Ger Toshav. And the answer is because inherently, the act of Ritzicha, whether it's done intentionally or not, is Ritzicha. And if not for the year Miklot, let the Gol Adam put him to death. Maybe there's even a mitzvah on the Gol Adam's part to put him to death. Ah, you'll ask me compassion. He's a Rotzeach B'Shogeg. Well, he's not such a good guy. Right? If in Gilad, Shechichei Rotzchim, there's a tremendous number of Rotzchim B'Mezid in Gilad, then I can already guarantee you that there'll be a tremendous amount of Rotzchim B'Shogeg. Now, what I'm suggesting is that when the Gemara says that Begilad Shechichei Rotzchim, it means all Rotzchim. Not the way Tosfos interpreted Shechichei Rotzchim B'Mezid, but therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to step in and organize that those Rotzchim B'Shogeg see their due judgment. But if there's no sensitivity to life, if there's no value in life, then people are going to die, whether it's deliberately or inadvertently. An inadvertent murder is also a reflection of the lack of seriousness and meticulous care in appreciating the value of life. Okay, let's go on. Who says it?
The Gorariyah. Okay, good. On the Torah. See, also.
What language does he use? Does he say?
He said
you have it in English or in Hebrew?
Yeah, I have it in English.
Oh, in English. Okay.
The word was
the same thing, or you?
Yeah.
No, you have a newer version.
Oh, okay. So you don't have the Gorariyah.
Uh-huh.
See, this is all around to
caused by callous disregard for human life.
Callous,
this I do.
Which was prevalent in Galat, that's a place where murder was more common, and inadvertent killing would also be more common.
Okay, good. Baruch Shekivanti to the Gurari. I'm in good company. So now let's go on. How does Abai know that in Gilad Shechichei Rotzchim, it's a pasuk in Hoshea Navi, Gilad Kiryas Pole Oven Akuva Midam? So what does this phrase Akuva Midam actually mean? He Amar Abelazar Shayu Okvim Laharog Nefashos. Okvim means when you follow someone or you jump on someone, you ambush someone, you hide and then jump out to kill him. Larog nefashos, that's called akuva bidam. And by the way, this is what led Tosfos to understand that we're talking in Gilad about rotzchim b'mezid, because shchichei rotzchim means akuva midam. You know, we're not talking about a guy who just slips on a banana peel or he lets go of the magal when he's tarring his roof. We're talking about someone who is an orev, right? He's an ambush guy, and he's doing it. He's doing it deliberately. Now, I wanted to add one point over here, and that is, okay, that we already more or less spoke out. Fine. My shno me hai gisa umai ume hai gisa demarachki. Umai shno mitzi oi demakarve. In other words, where did this murder take place? If this murder took place in, let's call it, a lot, or if it took place in Metula, right, on the extremities, then basically the Rotzeh has only one option. Now, to traverse that distance, he's going to have to get himself to the closest Ir Mikloth. However, for someone who lives, you know, in the middle of town, so to speak, meaning in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, then he has a better option. He's actually closer to the Ir Mikloth. And the reason for that is because wherever he is, again, I'll give it to you in an extreme case, he's equidistant to two different Ari Mikloth. I'm just giving you that as an example, but whatever it is, the distance that he has to travel, as opposed to the guys in a lot, is 50% of the way. And what does the Gemara want over here? So I don't understand. So how do we solve this problem? The Gemara must have an agenda here.
The distance is the same. It's the options that's different.
Well, no, that's not really true. Here, Sammy, let me. You have a piece of paper here? I'll use this. Here, I actually have paper. Look, if the distance between these four dots that we spoke about before is equal in all cases, so if somebody committed murder here at the tippy end of Eretz Yisrael, he's got to go this distance. If somebody committed murder here, then even if he only had one option, it's a heck of a lot easier to get to Ir Mikloth. He's traveling half the distance. In other words, when you're between two points, then by definition you are closer to one of these two points than to the other, which is much shorter than from the tippy end of Eretz Yisrael. And we can say the same thing from the north. Am I making myself clear? Again, the question I want to ask here is, so what is the Gemara advocating over here? Right? At the end of the day, I don't know what suggestion, what alternative the Gemara is coming up with. As what we've established is that Vishilashta, the Torah is requiring that there be equidistant between each one of the Ari Mikla. Then by definition, this is the Totsa'ah, how do you say? This is going to be the final conclusion. And based on this kash, Amar Abaye, Bishchem Nami Shchichi Ratzchem. In other words, that the Torah really thought this all out properly. And the reason why there had to be, in a sense, an ability in the center of Eretz Yisrael, or anywhere but the peripheries, to get to the Ir Mikloth in an easy, fast way, is because there's a lot of rotzach. So again, Enochinami. You know, for that rotzach who killed in the extremity, the north or the south, he's going to have to never go a longer distance. And maybe he should have thought that out before he settled there. I mean, he wanted to go scuba diving, so what can he do? But what the Torah is doing is, the Torah is not interested in the individual, the Torah is interested in the overall picture, the klal. And for the sake of the klal, we want to guarantee that where there are an abundance of rotzchim, that's where we'll facilitate those many rotzchim to get as quick as they can to Eretz Yisrael. Excuse me, to the Ir Mikloth. So where is the abundance of Ratzchim in a disproportionate way? It's in the middle area, in the Shechem area. You know, I'm thinking to myself, so many terrible things have happened in Shechem. It's like a Mu'ad Leparanius over and over again. And there were Ratzchim in Shechem. Maybe the... I don't know. I don't want to blame it on Shimon and Levi, but Shechem is a place where our enemies seem to always attack us. And we ourselves are somehow impacted by Shechem. Okay, but that's just on the side. How does Abaye know that there are a lot of rotzchim in Shechem? We already established that in Gilad there were many rotzchim. Dechsiv, the pasuk says, Uchechache ish gedudim chever kohenim derech yiratzchu Shechema. And the key word here is the word Shechema. So when we're dealing with Shechem, we're dealing with an abundance of rotzchim. My chever kohenim, what does that mean? Omer Abelazar, shayu mischavrim Laharog nefashos, the Torah, the Navi is using Kohanim as a as a metaphor for people who get together with a like-minded goal in mind. You know, if you come to the Beis HaGoren where the Yisraelim give out the truma, you'll find a group of Kohanim that are all there waiting to receive truma. He says, in a similar way, we find this group of Rotzchim that are concentrated in one area in the case of Shechem. All right.
And you also say it's the parallel between Gilad and Shechem. Gilad is a place of Shechem and Rotzchem, and therefore Shechem would have to be as well, because you've got these, the Aramon Kuhana, the Hashem.
But wait a minute, if you're asking me, wait, what question are you asking?
How did Abai know that Shechem is also Shechem? I'm saying you just said simply because it's Kuhana to Gilad, and if Gilad is...
Wait, so Alan, I don't know if your logic is compelling, but I would ask your same question in a different way. You know how I know that there's Shechichei Rotzkim in Shechem? Because Shechem is the place that has access to so many Ari Miklat. So it must have been that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took this into consideration. Meaning, it's a little bit of a pella that the Gemara Abayi needs this pasuk to establish that Shechichei Rotzkim b'Shechem. I mean, couldn't they have established that simply because by the very fact that this was where the Ari Miklat were accessible? But maybe what he wants to derive from this pasuk is that mischavrim, that this, you know, it's almost like a mafioso group here. You know, there are killers out there. And if there are killers, then they're going to be killers b'mezid, not b'shogeg. And now we have to revisit the Tosfos, who says that if there are a lot of rotzchim b'mezid, then there'll be a lot of rotzchim b'shogeg as well. In any event, let's go on in the Gemara. V'su leka. Well, why are you only mentioning in this Mishnah 6 Ari Miklat? V'aksiv, the Torah explicitly says, V'alem titnu arboim u'shtayim ir, and the Ari Levim also have the status of ir Miklat. So basically, if you want to identify the Ari Miklat, you have to include the 42 cities of the Levim. Amar Abaye says that we're focused on the full-fledged ir Miklat, that has all the powers therein. And what does that mean? Halalu, those that are mentioned, the six, Koltos, Bein Ledas, Ubein Shaloladas. So for example, let's say somebody has, you know, killed Bishogi, but he has no clue, nobody ever taught him, that this city has the power to offer him protection. Nevertheless, the city will protect him. The Ritva gives another example, where a person falls asleep, and they literally carry him into the Ir Miklat. So he's not even aware of the fact that he's in an Ir Miklat. That's called Klita Shalom Midas. Halalu, but the other 42, the remainder of the Ari Levim, is Ladas Koltos, Shaloladas, Enon Koltos. That only if you go there specifically because you know the power of the Ari Levim to be Koltos, then and only then do they offer you the power of Klita. The Marsha here has a kasha. He says, when you read the Gemara says, Visu Leka. The Gemara asks the question, are there no more Ari Levim? Correct? And that's a kasha on the Braisa that says there are only six. But when you read the Pasuk, at the end of Sefer HaMidbar, it says, Sheish Ari Mikla Tiena. And then the Pasuk says, Alam Titnu Arbaim Ushtaim Ir. So why is the Gemara raising a question here on the Mishnah? The Mishnah is not denying a Pasuk in Chumash that says, Alam Titnu Ari Alevim Arbaim Ushtaim Ir. But the Mishnah is focused on the Pasuk that says, Sheish Ari Mikla Tiena. In other words, the Torah never actually explicitly calls the Ari Levim Ari Miklat. The Torah uses the term Ari Miklat exclusively for those three cities in Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah, therefore, when it talks about Ari Miklat and gives the number, is simply following the pattern of the Torah. So what is the Gemara objecting to the Mishnah? And because of this question, the Marsha reinterprets the Sugya. And the Gemara is not asking, well, there are Ari HaLevim, and that itself is a steer to what you said, that there are only six Ari Miklat. He says, Yadua sheyeshnam chiluke dinim shonim bein are halavim le are miklot. Yesh chiluk beinem le inyanim tzarech hagola lahalo schar le levim adarim sham. Interesting that the rotschim, and we'll see this later on, have to pay rental fees. This is for real estate agents to the levim. You know, if a rotzeach packs into near Levi, he's got to pay the levim. Whereas, I guess you'd say that the Ari Miklat are government. What was the word? Subsidized. What do you say?
Public housing.
It's public housing, right? It's free housing. So the Gemara was aware of many distinctions between the Ari Miklat and the Ari Alevim. So what was the Gemara's cash over here? He says the following. Kushas haGemara kach hoisei. Gemara was bothered by the following. You're telling me that in Shechem and Gilad, Shechichei Rotzke, there was an unusual proportion of Rotzke. He says, well, wait a minute. There were 42 other Arei Miklat. Why is it necessary to add Arei Miklat to those areas, meaning Gilad and Shechem, where Shechichei Rotzke? But there are plenty of Ari Miklat. There's an abundance of Ari Miklat. 42 Ari Levim that are cult. So you know, parallel or corresponding to the abundance of Rotskim, you have an abundance of Ari Miklat. And the Gemara answers Halolu Lidas Kultos, meaning that the 42 cities of the Levim can only protect the Rotseach if the Rotseach knows that he's going in there for that purpose. And therefore, since the cities of refuge, meaning the six Arei Miklat, have a special status, in which even Shalolidas, they can protect the Rotzchim, the Gemara answers that that's why we need a disproportionate amount of Arei Miklat in those areas where there are Shechichei Rotzchim. And that will solve the problem that even though these Rotzke B'Shogeg enter into the Miklat Shalolidas, nevertheless they'll get protection. So that's the Marsha. The Gemara says, Chevron Ir Miklatu, V'aksiv Vayitnu L'Kolev Es Chevron Kashar Diber Moshe. Chevron was given as a gift to Kolev, and therefore insofar as it's a privately owned city, it cannot be an Ir Miklat. Ir Miklat has to be, as we said before, public housing. Amar Abaye says that what was given to Kol is not the entire city of Chevron, but Parvadoha, the suburbs, exactly. We call it Parvaveya Ir, right? This comes from other languages. Tichsiv Esdeha Ir Veschatzireh Nosnu Lekoli Ben Yifun Machuzosu, meaning he was granted the sados that were on the outskirts of the city, the chatzeros, but not the city itself. The city itself could not have been possibly granted to Chevron to Kolev, because it was an Ir Miklat. Okay, there's a Rashi here that I wanted to point out to you, but okay, we haven't gotten to it yet. Fine. Kedesh Ir Miklat Havoi? Vaksiv the Ari Mivtar Hatzidim the Kedesh. So Kedesh is defined by the Pasuk in Tanakh as, from Pasuk in Chumash, as what? As an Ir Mivtar. What's an Ir Mivtar? It's a gigantic metropolis that was located in Nachlas Naphtali. This is what we call a krach, right? If you're familiar with that term from Masechta Megillah. Visanya, the Bryce says, Arim alalu, the Arim Miklat, ain't osim also, lo tirin, not small villages, ktanim. And we'll see exactly why in a minute. Velo krachim gdolim, so they can't be too small, nor too large. They can't be too small because there's not enough of a food supply in these very, very small villages. Like if you ever travel through Europe, and you pass through the small village, it's not a good place to stay, to stop and try to get yourself a bite to eat. I mean, if they're kosher food, but let's say a drink or so. And the Krachim Gedolim, wow, those are masses of people, and we're afraid that the Gol Adam will somehow get lost, his identity will be unknown, and he'll jump out of the shadows and jump onto the road set. So we need exactly, you know, this is like Papa Bear, Mama Bear, we need We need that middle of the road size city. And here Rashi is going to say something important on Krochim Gdolim, that the Gol Adam is coming to sneak in. And the Ritva says, I don't need that. He says, we have to be choshesh that the Gol Adam will sneak into the city. Rashi is saying that nobody will see his identity. He'll come out in a jiff, jump out from the shadows. But the Ritva says, we won't even know that he got into the city because there's so many people going in and out of this metropolis. No one pays attention to the Gol Adam. They're not tracking him down. Ella, the only place that is a candidate for Ir Miklat is Ayaros Beinios. They have to be middle-sized cities. It can't be a Mivtzar Gadol. So if that being the case, how is it possible that Kedesh is an Ir Miklat? The Torah describes it as a great metropolis. And of course the answer is going to be that Kedesh is not exclusively one name of one city. Rav Yosef Tarte Kedesh Avoy. You know, like the Gemara sometimes sees a stira between one statement of Yosef and another with two Rav Yosefs, right? And how do we know that Kedesh has two cities? Because otherwise we can't reconcile this stira. Rav Ashi gives us other examples of the same idea. Kagon Slekum, the Akra de Slekum. There was a great metropolis which was called Slekum, sounds like an Arabic name. And near Slekum, there was a small kfar, a small village, that was called Akra de Slekum. And so too in the case of Kadesh, there were two cities, and the larger one was not a valid candidate as an Ir Miklat. Gemara says, Gufa, Orim alolo in osin osolo tirin ktanim. You can't make them small villages. Lo krachim gdolim ayoros beinonis. V'ein moshivin osan ela v'mokom mayim. They have to be, you know, supplied with ample water. Im ein shom mayim, if there's no water, then neviim lehem mayim. Water has to be imported into the city. Right, for example, when the Goral was done by Yoshua of the Orei Miklat in his time, there was no Mayim in the city, and therefore they had to bring water from another city. This is all recorded in Sefer Yoshua. Ve'ein Moshivin Osan Ela B'Makom Shvakim. The Orei Miklat have to be situated in places where there are markets. So the golem, those who have to run into the miklat, would have ample food to buy. Ein moshivin osel b'makom uchlusin. They should be placed in cities that are well populated. I'm sorry. No. That's not correct what I just told you. B'makom uchlusin means that there are people in the city or outside the city. I'm sorry. Now I got it. There are people outside the city. In other words, the city itself is surrounded by villages that are populated. And what's the importance of that? Rashi says, B'makom uchlusin, Rashi says, in order to stave off the possibility that the Gol Adam will gather together other Gol Adam, you're going to have the army, the legions of the Gol Adam, all of whom have relatives, you know, that they want to, I'm sorry, they want to avenge the murders of their relatives, and the murderers are all located in the same Ir Miklat. They're going to rise up in a siege, in a military campaign against the Ir Miklat to go in there and wipe out all the Rotschim. So how do we protect them? There are Kfarim, Uchlusim, populated villages that surround the city. And they'll let out a warning call, or they'll somehow form a protective belt around the Ir Miklat. And in Nismatu Achloseim, if people have decided to move out of the Kfarim that's around the city, is Bezdin are responsible? Mosifin Aleim, they have to add other people and resettle them. Nismatu Dioreim, if the cities of refuge become diminished of population, people have moved out, then Bezdin Mevim Lehem Kodim Levim Yisraelim. So they should replace those who are left and make sure that the city of refuge is populated. And now the question is, why do they have to bring Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim? What's the emphasis here? So the Mefarshim explained they cannot bring Gerim or Psule Kol. They have to bring Miuchasim. And the Ritva asks, why is it so important to have Miuchasim? He says, because they are Bale Midas HaRachmanus V'lo Shofchei Damim. And they would not allow the Rotzeach to be killed by the Gol Adam. They're compassionate people. Okay? Next time you give an aliyah to someone, you ask him whether he's a Kohen Levi Yisrael, keep in mind that he's got to be compassionate. The Ein Mochrim Bahen, we're almost finished. Lo Klei Zayin. There's no weapons. This is gun control. And the only thing is that gun control is only limited to Eretz Yisrael, to the Ari Mikla. What I derived from this is that there was not much gun control in Eretz Yisrael. You know, it's like you walk into a mall here in Israel, and like every other guy has a gun in his back pocket. You know what I'm saying? But in the Ari Mikla, they didn't allow that to go on because the Gol Adam could come in, right? You know, like for example, you remember the case of the of Hebrew University. You know what the terrorist did was at night he threw in his stuff over the fence. And then he walked in, and the security let him in. And then he went over to his stuff that he had hit, you know, had thrown over the fence, and he did his terrorist act.
Here it only says Ein Mochrim. Doesn't mean you can't enter with one. It means that they didn't set up stores. They closed the stores down.
Right, right. Maybe they closed stores and so forth and so on. But anyway, there shouldn't be easy access to Klei Zayin. Imagine the Gol Adam comes in. Nobody suspects him of anything. You know, he's like one of the bunch. You know, he's coming in. Oh, they have a sale in the Mikla. They're selling, you know, there's a flea market. Meanwhile, he goes into the first store that he has and he buys himself a pistol. Lo Klei Mitsuda. Those are traps that are very, very dangerous. All you have to do, I mean, again, it's really set for the animals, but all you have to do is push someone into this trap and that's it. He's pretty much a goner. And all this is Divrei Reb Nechemya. Chachamim Matirim. The Chachamim think that it's not so dangerous. We don't have to go to such far extreme and prohibit the sale of weapons and the use of traps, animal traps, in the Arei Miklat. But the Shavim, they all agree, She'ein Parsin B'tochan Mitsudos, that although you can sell these traps, but we're not going to set them up within the city and allow the Gol Adam easy access to implement his dastardly intention. And ve'ein mafshilin l'tochan chavolim kidei shelo yehi regel Gol Adam mitzuya sham. Now what is this business about mafshilin lahem chavolim? Okay, we're almost at the end over here. Rashi doesn't say anything, does he? I looked for the Rashi, I didn't find it. If somebody finds Rashi, let me know. Let me tell you what I have here in Masifta. He writes, Ein kolim sham chutim lasosam chavolim. They used to take very strong rope, and they used to intertwine the rope, you know, braid it. Right, that's called a klia, as a braid. Kidei shalote regel gol adam mitsuyasham. Right, he says the following: that im yasa kain biore miklat yesh lochnu shehi motzui shom gol adam. In other words, basically, if I understand this correctly, there are certain very rare commodities that are not sold wholesale across Israel, and in those specific places where that unique kind of artisanship and the professional work is done, it becomes very attractive for people to gravitate there to purchase these very rare items. One of which are these chavolim. You know, it's like if you go through Europe, you'll always see in each city they have an expertise in one area. Like, have you ever heard of Bueno? You know, outside of Venice, you know, that's where they do the glass making. So, you know, people stream to Bueno in order to watch the way they manufacture glass and to purchase glass. And if that's going to happen, so then the Eir Miklat becomes so attractive that people are going to visit the Eir Miklat. Yesh chash lachush she matzu sham Gol Adam. The Gol Adam is going to find his way over to these cities, and once he's there, he'll be very, very tempted, and it'll be a little bit easier once he's in the city to commit murder. Okay, so Rabbi Moshe, we'll stop here, and believe me, the next week we'll pick it up from Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak is going to reveal to us the secret of all these dinim and what the Torah's attitude is towards the Rotseach and why the Ir Miklat has to be so well supplied and so easy and comfortable to live.
Another map of Eretz Yisrael with the tribes, but it doesn't describe where the six cities are. You have Yehuda and Reuven close to each other. We all thought that Reuven was up north, right?
But Reuven here is where?
Across from Yehuda, directly across from Yehuda.
No.
And then you have...
Maybe he's basing himself on our sugya in Marcus. I don't know. Truth is, I'm a big fan of art school, but in this case, I'm disappointed.
This is not art school.
No, I'm just saying I'm disappointed in art school. You know, if I ever needed a Gemara with a picture, this would be the sugya. You know, if you look, art school has in Hebrew something called Schattenstein. When they published Masechta Chulin, I was the first one to buy it. It's got colored pictures in it. You know, to understand the biology in Chulin, you know, of all Trefus, you got to have these pictures. You know, you read the Rashi 50 million times, you have no clue what he's talking about. You know, it's a kind of here, innovation here, and you don't know what's going on. Again, the colored pictures are a little